Latino Justice, the civil rights group, has gotten involved. There are going to be lawsuits, and there are going to be even more escalating protests over the next few days.
Well, Rutgers University Professor Juan Gonzalez, thank you so much for that analysis, and of course, Democracy Now! Co-host. That does it for our show. Tune in Tuesday night for Democracy Now! Super Tuesday live special broadcast with The Intercept from 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight, right here at democracynow.org and on many stations around the country. We have a number of positions that we are hiring for in our newsroom, outreach and development teams, information application deadlines at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masu, Trina Maduro, Tamaria Studio, Adriana Contreras. I'm Amy Goodman Gonzalez.
Looking to add a four-legged friend to your family? Well, here's the opportunity for you. Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit is sponsoring a program for the month of February, where all adoption fees are either waived or offered at a reduced option, all thanks to a generous donation from Mary Ann Wright. So if you've been debating about the right time to get a pet, now is the time, but only for the month of February. Go to MetroDetroitAnimals.org to learn how to save one of their animals and welcome them into your home.
Tune in with me, Sunny D, every Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. for The Music Soul Box. Let me take your ears through the soulful sounds of The Music Soul Box with new and local upcoming artists and your favorite throwbacks. So join me, Sunny D, every Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on 89.3 WHFR.FM.
Just a reminder that 8-week class registration is still open for Henry Ford College students. The window is closing, but seats are still available for the second half of the semester. If you would like to explore an 8-week class, log on to WebAdvisor or stop by the counseling office.
Hey, come join me, DJ Fun Monkey, at my new time slot, noon to 2 on Mondays, to listen to the best alternative rock, indie, and various other music genres. From Taking Back Sunday to
times like these, where silence beats
to Great Grandpa.
I can't breathe, would you give me something?
That's noon to 2 on Mondays, and listen in between the music just to find out what's going on with movies, video games, and other media as well.
It's locked up like a trophy, forgetting all the things.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. Glad to have you back with us this Friday afternoon. We've got some great things to talk about going on here on the HSC campus. We're going to talk with a representative from our library, the Escheman Library, in just a little bit, and that's going to be a great conversation that we recorded, just a couple of days ago. And where are we going to start right now, Susan?
Yeah, well, we're going to keep it all things HFC, as we like to do. Of course, we are a community radio station and a campus community station as well. And we've got lots to talk about here related to things going on at the internal aspect of Henry Ford College. As you know it, as a listener, we try to make sure that we're covering the basis of things that our students are doing so you can see what wonderful things we're very proud of. One of the things we are proud of is our Vice President of Student Affairs, and his name is Dr. Daniel Herbst, and I think it's been almost exactly 2 years since we first welcomed you, Dr. Herbst, on our airwaves when you were just a newbie here at the college, and so you've got a little time under your belt and a little opportunity to kind of showcase some of your favorite or not-so-favorite things that you're working on. We'll keep it good, but look forward to getting an update from you. You stayed with us 2 years, so that's a good
that's
start.
True.
Yeah. Nothing made you run away for too long anyway. You turned around and came back. Yeah. So we're happy to have you here. Thank you for your commitment to our college, our students especially, and to educating us on what's going on. The job itself, as you came in and were hired for the student affairs position, my understanding is, sort of following this around, it's sort of changed a little bit since mm-hmm. since you initially took that position. Tell us about that.
Well, I remember when I was here the first time, I'd been here for about 25 days, mm-hmm. and you asked me all the changes I wanted to bring forward. And I said at the time, I really wasn't in any position to make any changes. I really wanted to learn the campus. I know there was a lot of things going right, a lot of good things going on, some areas where I could probably see to be able to contribute to making some changes. And so I think over the last 2 years, it's been a learning experience for me. I think it's been a great experience for me. We have made some changes on campus, some very positive changes for students. I may have said this the first time I was here, but on my whiteboard in my office, I have two sayings I keep up there. First one is, what's best for students? And the second one, what are you willing to do about it? Mm-hmm. So when people come to me and they have an issue about a student issue or something that needs to go on in a classroom, I say, great, is this best for students? And what are you willing to contribute to getting it done.
Mm. We know our listeners are very loyal, yes, Alan, mm-hmm. and they're regulars for the most part, but should that rare occurrence have happened 2 years ago that someone missed your first interview here as you know, that is not even a chance, but just let's just say, tell us a little bit about your position here at the college,
sure.
how you interact not only as a member of cabinet, but also really as a liaison for our students.
Great. I'm the vice president of student affairs, which means that the areas that report to me include everything from enrollment services to campus safety now reports to me as well, athletics reports to me, counseling, career services, veteran services all report up through my office to be able to help. Dr. Michael Neal and I have become very close working partners together. We really get along great. He says that he does everything inside the classroom. I do everything other than what's inside the classroom. And so what we're trying to work together on is making sure that the student has a total experience while they're here.
So 2 years on, what have you learned about students here at HFC and what their needs are?
That's a great question. I've been fortunate to work around the country. I say fortunate. My dad would say I can't keep a job. But I worked around the country a couple of different places. And I've worked in different major cities. I've worked in St. Louis. I've worked in Phoenix and a few other places. And what I have found that the students in general have a lot of the same concerns, but they have different ways of expressing that concern or bringing it forward, and issues that we have to deal with that are different because of the locale, the culture, and the environment that we're in to be able to do that. And so although I bring a lot of experience from before, I had to really learn Dearborn. I had to learn the students who are coming into our campus and being able to serve them at a higher level. So when I came on board, you asked me when I was going to start making changes, and I said I was going to take at least, you know, 90 to 100 days. And that 90 and 100 days was very important for me to understand where my skills could best serve the students that we have here.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you find that our students are strongest at, their strengths?
I think that students here are really good academically. I'm really impressed with a number of our students who will come here, complete their degrees, complete your degrees. I don't have to say that too often, but they should complete their degree before moving on. And then moving on to the University of Michigan or Michigan State or Wayne State or wherever we allow, you know, we encourage them and participate in them moving on to be able to do. I think they're also very good at, we have a lot of students who are coming in here who are first generation students who have had some economic challenges. And I really am impressed with the way that they're able to succeed within this environment. I think Henry Ford is a very welcoming environment when it comes to that. We could talk about the Detroit Promise Program. We could talk about many things that we do here that provide them the opportunity to be successful here at a very strong academic program, academics college that would allow them to take their program somewhere else.
Yeah. Piggybacking on Alan's question, to the other sort of the other side of it, things that we want to continue to really focus on to improve, to bring our mm-hmm. students maybe up to speed to some of the national averages, or even just in terms of the behind the scenes, emotionally, psychologically,
well, that's
a lot going on.
That's an interesting question, because if you're talking about the students who are, you know, first generation going to college,
yeah.
they don't they don't have the idea of what the college environment is like. And, mm-hmm. you know, Susan, you and I having, you know, been through college and sort of, I would hope, figuring out what it's all about. you know, I mean, students, you know, are coming into a completely different environment, and they don't know the expectations. They don't know exactly, you know, what success means in the environment.
There's that statement, they don't know what they don't know,
yeah.
which can be difficult, can be.
But it's absolutely 100% accurate. I'm also a first-generation college student. My mm-hmm. parents did not go to college either. And I think it's important for us not to look through our own lenses, that our students who are coming in the door in the year 2020 have a lot of the same issues as the students who came through the door in 1974 when I went off to college. But their lenses are different, their views are different, their talents are different, technology is different, and so all those things need to be taken into effect when we're trying to help them. Listening to, I think the biggest misnomer that people say, especially when they start looking like me, get a little bit older, that, well, I remember back in my day. Well, back in my day, I had hair past my shoulders. I wore bell bottoms, and I challenged everything that was told to me by an instructor in class. The long hair is gone, the bell bottoms are gone, but the fact that students still challenge their instructors still exists. So that hasn't changed, and I think we should both respect that and embrace that. I think that's a good thing about being at a college.
In the process of learning our culture and our student population, as well as bringing in some of your own areas of expertise, your own strengths, have you found any one or two particular things that you are best at, that you have and will continue to really utilize in terms of applying that to your position at our campus?
Well, if it comes to helping students, I love having students in my office. They keep me young. Every student who comes in, I have an open door policy. I believe that President Cavalluna has the best open door policy I've ever seen. And so there's constantly students coming up to our floor to be able to talk. So I'm not that far off from students. Right. I'm not teaching in a class, but I do still see students on a regular basis, as well as attending student events and those other types of things. So that type of contact really important for us. But when it comes to the staff, the one thing that I'm trying to instill in our staff, and I think we've been fairly successful, is the whole idea that every student counts, every student matters who comes in the front door. There are so many things that we can do to be successful, help the student be successful. We need to be successful, the student's successful. When I came in 2 years ago, enrollment had been going down on a steady pace for the last 8 semesters. And the first meeting I had with President Cavalluna, I can still remember this, he says, what are we going to be able to do about this? I've talked to many people. They're telling me enrollment's going to go down. It's going down around the country. And I looked at him and says, how big do you want to be? Mm. Because the attitude I had was, we could do the things that make students successful and want to come here and overcome some of the issues that had been blocking our, not only our students here, but other places around the country to make them be successful. And because of a lot of efforts, and we can go into that if you'd like to, a lot of efforts by a lot of people on this campus, our enrollment's up the last 2 semesters for the first time in many years. And I take no credit for that. I give all the credit to the staff, to the strategic enrollment management team, to the faculty, to everyone who's doing the little things that make students successful. I have a phrase, and I promised my staff I would retire the phrase at the end of the year, because I've heard it for 2 years. And the phrase is, enrollment decline is death by 1,000 pinpricks. It's not one thing that we have to do to solve that for students. It's a student comes in who doesn't have money for the bus. A student comes in who's failing one class and wants to drop all their classes because they're failing one class. There's a student whose grandmother had just passed away and they don't know how to deal with that grief. Every one of those issues is a separate issue, but unless we're able to address that, we're going to lose that student. And we're doing such a great job of addressing those issues at the point that students have these concerns. We've done a lot of changes in the Welcome Center. We've done a lot of changes across campus on how students feel more welcome on campus. And do we have a long way to go? Yes. And I love the idea that our students come in on August and they leave in December, and we have this learning curve we expect them to have exponentially go up. but we stay the same most of the years. So I've encouraged my staff to think about what can we do differently to be able to serve that student as they're getting better in their field, mm-hmm. for us to be able to stay with them, to continue to them along the way to go. So yeah. I could talk about enrollment management for hours. I had a friend of mine at another college call me and says, okay, our board meeting's tonight. They've asked me to call you because your enrollment's going up. They want to know why. Mm. And I said, do you have 4 hours? And he laughed and says, no. I said, I'm only partially kidding about that. But there's so many things that people are doing here. And when you ask me what I saw to be able to do mm-hmm. here, what I did was give people ideas, give them support, give them the freedom to do their jobs, and then I got out of their way so they could do it. I'm there if they fall. You mentioned you were helping a student who slipped a while ago, mm-hmm. and you helped her up. And I'm there if they slip. But for the most part, we have very dedicated, hardworking people here on this campus doing wonderful things. And what they need to know is that we appreciate that, we value that, but most of all, our students appreciate that.
As somebody not in administration, and I mentioned this last week when we had Athletic Director Rochelle Taylor here, one of the biggest challenges we have is that we are, you know, in one way or another, however you get here, however you need to get here, a commuter campus. There's not that, you know, on-campus life that's the exact same thing. How do you feel about that challenge?
I have worked at both four-year institutions, mm-hmm. two-year institutions, and two-year institutions with dormitories.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them have their own different unique challenges, and I do believe that one of the things that we are working toward here is making students feel more engaged when they get to campus. Everything from the radio station to athletics to a strong student activities office, which is in this building, to how they feel when they're in the classroom with the instructors. I'm just so amazed with some of the events that we have on campus that are run by faculties for students. We just had Dr. Tony Perry did a great program just mm-hmm. last week, and I sat on two of the open discussions and panel discussions. It's like, this is why I work at a college, because A, I get this for free, and B, it's in my backyard, and I really appreciate all the work that goes on. So we're doing a lot of right things here at Henry Ford College.
It's that subtle difference between being somewhere you need to go to being somewhere you want to be at.
Yes. For both those events, I turned down my computer and I got on the elevator and I was there. And it was so nice for us to be able to do. So we have all those events. One of the things I did bring to the campus is that I have a national view of things. I've served as a president of a national organization. I've worked around the country, and I have friends in different parts of the country. And about a year or so ago, a friend of mine who works down in Florida is heavily involved in an activity called Black, Brown, and College Bound, which brings together students and a lot of national figures. Everybody from John Legend has spoken there to the gentleman who James Brown, who was the newscaster on CBS Sports, are their keynote speakers, and they bring students there, and they're usually first generation students who are having the experience of seeing successful people who look like them, who want to talk with them, who will mentor them. So we sent a group of students last year. We're sending twice as many students this year to Florida. For some of them, it's the first time on an airplane. Some of them, it's the first time to Florida. And who doesn't want to go to Florida in April? I mean, it's really a good opportunity for them to do that. So I think that the more we do outreach, the more that we see that there are things happening in other parts of the country that we can participate in and our students will benefit from that. When we do that, I think the better off they're going to be. So, and you mentioned Rochelle Taylor, and I hate to single out one of my managers, but she's brilliant. The work that she does for the teams, and she cares about every one of those students so individually. And that's the type of people I love working around. Yeah. They make my job really a lot of fun to come to work on a snowy day.
We are joined in studio at this time with Dr. Daniel Herbst. He is the Vice President of Student Affairs here at Henry Ford College. We are excited to get his perspective, being really at that, almost on the front lines as it relates to students, but it's outside of the classroom on those front lines and just as important as what they're doing inside the classroom. It must really be sort of a symbiotic relationship. If one side of that boat is tipping, It's an unsteady journey, yeah. And so we love the fact that that you and Dr. Nealon are collaborating so much. He is our Vice President of Academic Affairs, and I know that Cabinet gets together often. I know it's a process where we are trying to look sort of big picture at what's best for the college, the institution, but also we do have our smaller pockets doesn't sound like the right word, areas that maybe have some special need, some special focus, attention that requires some extra support, whatever the case may be. One of the areas that you're working on, you mentioned earlier, is this thing called the Detroit Promise. And I know that that is a collaborative effort by mm-hmm. a number of you know areas on this campus to make students in this particular very specific area rewarded and successful and feel like they are a part of this institution, even if it's in sort of a different way than maybe what might be traditional. So would you give us an update on what that's sure. all about, and for people that aren't familiar with the Detroit Promise in general?
The Detroit Promise is a joint operation between Henry Ford College and the Detroit Regional Chamber. The employees are hired as the coaches that we have are hired as Henry Ford employees, but their finance and money comes through the Detroit Chamber. The students who are eligible to be part of the Detroit Promise have to be Detroit residents, and they have to have graduated from a Detroit high school. They are then assigned to a coach, and these coaches will have weekly contact with them, sometimes monthly, but at least weekly via text messages, FaceTime, whatever the newest way to communicate, that they will do that. But they also do a one-to-one real one-to-one meeting with every student on a monthly basis. If the students are not attending classes, they know about it first, and they're right on the phone calling and says, what's going on? It's just something to help you with. Your car problem, you lose your bus pass, what can we do to help get you back in the classes? And when I started here 2 years ago, we had 200 students and two coaches. Come May, we will have four coaches and over 400 to 500 students who are taking classes here coming through the Detroit Promise program. And when I said I was doubling the number of students going down, last year it was the group through Dr. Harvell's group that he sends down, the Black Males and Queens group. I'm sending students down with them, but the other students are coming from the Detroit Promise program. I'm sending down to Black, Brown, and College Brown.
Oh, interesting.
And so the coaches do a wonderful job. There are four of them. They're very intensive in the way that they do the counseling and do the coaching. Whenever you hear them speak, it's like you just wish we could have a coaching program for every student who comes in the door, mm-hmm. because we know that that's a way to success for all students, let alone students who have some of the challenges that are the students who are coming to us to the Detroit Promise students. So I'm very, very happy with the program. About a year and a half ago, I actually reorganized a program that the program reported up to Lorraine Papenroth, who is our manager of advising. And she was able to incorporate what they're doing in the Detroit Promise program into all of enrollment services. Mm-hmm. So instead of this being a separate program where they're trying to provide all the services over here, they're totally embedded in the Welcome Center. The students, you know, they're 5 minutes away from getting help from financial aid when they come in. They're 5 minutes from seeing an academic advisor if they're concerned about a class transferring. It really does work out with them being there in that particular way. So in a lot of ways, it's I love the program. I love what the coaches are doing for the students there.
Yeah, this began is that I have heard a couple of different stories of kind of how the Detroit Promise came about. The name itself, Detroit Promise, I know has some significance in terms of sort of a special motivation for students to complete high school mm-hmm. successfully, and mm-hmm. so that, as I understand, is the basis of it. And once a student does finds that motivation, if you know you've got some college coming after the fact, you're going to want to perform better and stick it out and graduate from high school and so on. How big can this get, do you think?
Well, every 100 or so students, we need a new coach based on the model that we have.
Okay.
So it will grow as much as the Detroit Chamber can be able to support us in the way of coaches. Mm-hmm. I can tell you we're the largest Detroit Promise program in the state. We are by far. We have the most successful students coming through the Detroit Promise. It has a lot to do with the coaching and the way that they're working with the Detroit Chamber. The Promise idea is an idea that's working around the country. In fact, we met with someone from Grand Rapids because they want to do a Grand Rapids Promise. Mm-hmm. And the promise is that if you come to college and you fit these guidelines, you are able to go basically for free. What happens is that you apply for federal financial aid, And whatever is not covered by federal financial aid is then covered by the Promise Program. So basically, it's an opportunity for a student to get a they have to earn it because they have to keep the classes and they have to keep going for it, but it's an opportunity for them to go to school for free.
Wow. We are looking at so many different programs and ways to support our students. Much of this cannot happen without funding. Much of this cannot happen without our community being on board, mm-hmm. our community at large, so to speak. And I know we are always trying to tap into the resources of community members and so on, what with fundraising and through the foundation here at the college and so on. And we've had conversations in the past with them as well. But is there an area, are there some areas, some things that might be in the works that you might need some support on, some special funding?
You asked me if I need more money?
Yeah, I guess I am. crazy question.
Well, it is a crazy question, but it's a very valid question. As you probably know, and I suppose the community knows, is that the funding for community colleges here at Henry Ford is basically based on tuition and fees. That is our major source of being able to provide services for students. And so it behooves us for us to keep and maintain a steady growth in enrollment that's healthy, that we support, and that they're successful when they're coming. We're not just taking in students to be taking in. We have a plan to get them through and into the next level to be able to do that. As you know, probably Dr. Nealon would be the right person to talk to this, but we have the new science and technology building that they're talking about that's coming online hopefully very soon. There's the IEMP program, which has a lot to do with us becoming a national leader in teaching sustainable activities and training people to work in sustainable fields. There's a lot of wonderful things coming on that will take money either at the state level or from other funding sources that we'll be able to provide. John Sikalski, the vice president of finance, is probably, would be the right person to talk about because he – why his head doesn't explode, I don't know, but he understands all these numbers much better than I do. So, but the community college is a great opportunity for students because we have such low costs. We have either the third or fourth lowest tuition rate for community colleges in the state. That includes larger schools, smaller schools, all size schools, and be able to do that. Because of that, it's important for us to be able to make sure that these students maintain and are successful and complete because we want to make sure that they feel that the value is here for them to come and that they will tell other people, and success breeds success, as you know, that to be able to do that.
Sure.
So, I mean, there's all these issues. We could talk about the financial part of it, but for our particular area, yeah, we're constantly concerned about making sure that we're good stewards of whatever money that we have to be able to do things.
Yeah.
Lots of conversations about that going on a weekly basis.
No doubt. You mentioned just a little bit ago something about a student, having a transportation issue or needing a bus pass or needing some support with, something, again, outside of the range of what they're doing in the classroom. We've got the Women's Recognition Luncheon coming up in just a few
March,
weeks, which
yep.
is an opportunity for fundraising to support the student success, fund on campus.
The Hawk's Nest as well.
And the Hawk's Nest as well, yeah. So so many of those opportunities already exist, and we continue to promote them and support them and so on. But, sometimes it's a situation where a student just needs to talk it out.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to chat about whatever they're carrying around with them that's getting in the way of them being able to be successful. And you kind of alluded to that. But I've heard so many wonderful stories about our counselors doing mm-hmm. great things, as well as Lorraine and our advisors as mm-hmm. well, sort of trying to nip these things early on,
right.
and then we've got our early alert system as well, which allows faculty to identify things going on in the classroom that might help students with their sort of outside classroom issues. But when it comes to ways that you are directly impacting students, whether it is just sitting there and letting them vent or something, how often do you, because I know you said you have an open door policy as well.
Mm-hmm.
How often does that kind of stuff actually take place?
Not as much as I would like, but I'm trained as a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And so when students come in the door, I feel very comfortable with being able to talk with them. You mentioned both the Lorraine Papenroth and then also the counselor was Abe Atala. Mm. And what we have done in the last year is really very positive for students is that we've hired 8 new full-time navigators who serve as our academic advisors. They do the academic advising and they also do the early alert. So when you mentioned early alert, we rolled out to the campus a full early alert program this year, and already through February we've had 274 referrals from faculty about early alerts. Each one of those students were contacted by a navigator to find out what's going on and how we can help them, sort of the same way that the coaches do in the Detroit Promise. 91 of those students were directly referred to counseling. So we have this crossover that works really well. The counselors are working very hard to make sure that they have the time available because this is really increasing the workload for them as well. And what we're trying to do is make sure that the counseling service becomes a true counseling service and people see that as a place where they can go and be safe. I know a lot of people feel that way, but we're enhancing that even more. So with the academic advising done in the navigators, that technical part of it, does this class go to University of Michigan? Yeah. Yes, it does. That doesn't need a counselor. But then if a student says, I'm really, really upset about something, I need to talk, then we have the direct referral over to counseling. So we have that sort of a symbiotic relationship between the two where one cannot exist without the other. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to do with that. As for me, as I said, I have an open-door policy when students come in. I can tell you that most of the time my referral is to Dr. Atala. I will listen to a student for the hour and then say, you sound like you have a lot of interesting needs here that I know the right person to turn you to. Mm-hmm. And I will call Dr. Atala and he'll take him in right away to be able to do that. So
yeah, it's wonderful. And it's wonderful that you have, I don't know if it happened right away, but certainly built up over the past 2 years, the confidence in these people. Mm-hmm. Because the last thing we want to do, I know as instructors, is to refer somebody to somebody else without really full knowledge that they're going to help, because it's all it takes is one bad referral and a student is out. You know, they're gone. Mm-hmm. They don't trust us anymore. So it sounds like that was maybe a part of something that was very important to you mm-hmm. to build that relationship.
The infrastructure has to be here. Yeah. We have to be able to have the right number of staff trained to do the right job and who are working together to be able to do this. Are we perfect? No. Will we need to continue to grow? Of course we will. That's what a college does if it wants to continue to serve its students, and that's what we'll continue to do.
Yeah. Happy students at Henry Ford College are successful students at Henry Ford mm-hmm. College, and then they're successful members of our community, and they gain successful employment in our community at large or travel and do so elsewhere. But this is good for everybody, this opportunity for a positive experience through student affairs. And certainly, Dr. Herbst, you are not only contributing to what's already been going on in terms of positive and successful things, but really paving the way to make things stronger and better. Do you have a particular area of interest, a short-term or long-term goal, something that you are sort of a vision, and you know, vision 2020 as we sort of focus on this year here ahead? It's only February after all, but we've still got some time, right?
Well, one of the things I'd like to be able to do is to improve outreach into certain other areas. We've talked about the students who come out of Detroit, but there's also a Latino group is working with us to get those students to come to us.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because there is no, like, you know, like prototypical or stereotypical HFC student. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I mean, students
I love
from
the
Detroit,
diversity. I love the diversity.
The Arab American yeah. community, the Latino community, there are students from all around, you know, the area that work their way through here.
First generation students with both parents with doctorate. We have all kinds of students here on campus. The challenges for that is for finding a way that all of them feel mm-hmm. that this is the right place for them. And I think we're doing a lot of things in that direction to be able to do that. What would I like to see a year from now? I've told my staff this. I said, you know, a year from now, when we solve all the issues that we're dealing with now, we're going to have all new issues to deal with next year. And I'm looking forward to whatever they're going to be. I can't tell you what they're going to be.
Sure.
But, you know, the college or the institution that becomes stagnant is a college that is no longer serving its students. And for us to grow and to be alive, we have to respond to our students' needs.
It we are like a living document, but we are living and breathing institution for at a number of levels. We are so grateful for this update.
Thank you.
We look forward to touching base, maybe not taking as long as 2 years, but maybe within the next year ahead. And if there are any specific initiatives or things that you ever want to chat about, share with our community at large, please don't hesitate to reach out.
And for any students or any staff or faculty out there who have any concerns about anything we have talked about, anything they've heard on campus, please contact my office. Patty Flogus is my wonderful administrative assistant. It's so funny, when I interviewed her, she looked at me and she goes, "If you get this job, you'll be working for me." And she's absolutely right. I spent the last 2 years being very happy working for Patty, so it's been very nice that way.
It sounds like Patty. Yeah,
it does sound like Patty.
but
she'll get the students to see me, or if I'm not available, to the right person, to the counselor or to the navigator or to the coach who needs to be able to help them.
Great. Well, we truly appreciate you and your time and effort today.
Thank you. It's been very, very much fun.
Thank you. We have lots of opportunities to connect with everybody here at the college that can be a resource for you as a parent, as a grandparent perhaps, an aunt or an uncle, someone that needs some information, some advice about anything happening here on our campus. Please don't hesitate to reach out. Our website is a great option, hfcc.edu. We want to continue to share that, but also don't hesitate to just call the main number of the school and ask for the right person, and you'll get there. 313-845-9600. It's just as easy as that. Alan, we're going to...
And you ask for Dr. Herbst?
Dr. Herbst. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's send everybody to him.
Yeah.
That's a great start.
Yeah.
As far as students, no, just as we, as we wrap up, sort of like what the outreach is to be able to get a hold of, where is that clearinghouse for the, services that students might need, or where should they go?
Sure. Yeah. And you're still, I know, in the administration building. Yes, at least for the time being.
Right.
And
L430,
so on.
Right.
Okay. Very good. So we can find you directly.
Sure.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank
appreciate
you
that. Certainly. You feel like reading a book, Alan? I think we might go to the library in just a little bit here.
Yeah, let's see what we can find. Maybe there's some periodicals. Maybe there's a book or two. Let's see what's going on at the Eshman Library.
Chicken soup for the teacher's soul, perhaps?
There you go. It's the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. Dr. Herbst, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back with more in just a moment here on the station Making Waves, WHFR 89.3, WHFR.FM.
Have you ever wanted to work in radio? Whether it be a hobby or maybe stepping stone to build your career? Henry Ford College has the right program for you. TCM 189 is an 8-week course that teaches the fundamentals of broadcasting and helps people become a better broadcaster. After completing the course, graduates will be eligible for a show right here on WHFR. For more information, go to hfcc.edu. There's only a few spots per semester, and seats fill up quickly. So log on to your web advisor today and reserve your place for TCM 189.
With multiple language courses to choose from, Henry Ford College is your place to expand your knowledge and learn a new language. Now offering classes and certificate programs in American Sign Language and Spanish, along with beginning to advanced level courses in French, German, and Chinese. American Sign Language is the third most common language used to communicate here in the United States. Within the last few years, it has become one of the fastest growing languages offered at Henry Ford College. Not only can knowing American Sign Language set you apart in a competitive job market, but it can help you build bridges between the deaf and hearing community in your own neighborhood. Now is your time to finally learn American Sign Language like you've always dreamt of. Enroll today at Henry Ford College.
Guys and dolls, this is Daddy G, and the malt shop is moving to a new time slot, 1 p.m. every Tuesday here in WHFR. We're still spinning the platters from the 50s and 60s just an hour earlier. That's 1 p.m. every Tuesday on 89.3 FM, WHFR.FM. Be there or be square.
Yeah.
Henry Ford College is a smoke-free campus. Henry Ford College supports and is committed to wellness and a healthy environment. No person shall smoke, chew, or use tobacco, tobacco products, vaping, or smoking simulation products on campus, with the exception of use in private vehicles. Use of recreational marijuana, however, is strictly prohibited anywhere on campus. The HFC smoke-free policy applies to all faculty, staff, students, vendors, contractors, and visitors to our campus. For more information on the HFC smoke-free policy, visit policies.hfcc.edu.
Welcome back to the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here, along with Alan Mazurek. Well, we are absolutely back to school, and it's still chilly outside, and we still want to snuggle up at home with our hot cocoa and a good book, or at least I know I enjoy that perk once in a while, but it's something that we should do to feed our souls as well as our spirits.
Yeah, right,
yes,
yeah.
When time permits. Well, we thought that we would go to the gem of a resource right here on our own campus and have an opportunity to talk about our own Henry Ford College's library, the Eshelman Library. We have the library director, Kate Harger, here today. And Kate, this is your first time on our airwaves. We are so excited to have you here. How long have you been officially the library director now at HFC? It seems like just yesterday in some ways, but other ways it seems like you've been here forever. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I started in January of last year, so it's been just over a year now. Yep. And I've been a library leader for many, many years. Second career, but I love what I do, and I'm really happy to be here.
Great. What is it that attracted you to the position of library director here at Henry Ford College? What makes our library so unique that you wanted to spend some time here with us?
Well, I love the campus community in general, our sense of diversity, and that's a strong value here at HFC. So that really drew me particularly to this place.
Very good. When we get into the idea of students and the ratio of library use. It goes up, it goes down, and Alan, you see this too. We know that we encourage our students to go for the resources and so on, but we also have the pleasure of seeing students just pop in for their own enjoyment. So how would you describe the average sort of student population as it makes up using the library here on campus?
Well, students come into the library for a variety of purposes and variety of uses, and we encourage that great variety. So some come in to study individually, just independently, gearing up for midterms or finals. Some come in with large groups to study with groups, and we have several study rooms for them to utilize in a group study capacity. Some come in just to use a computer. We've got about, over 100 computers for them to use. Of course, we have friendly and helpful librarians, too, to walk them through any research assignments that they have. And that can be a great source of stress for students when they find out that they have to write a research paper. So they can come in for guidance, and we can walk them step by step through that process.
Now, the concept of a library has definitely changed in the digital age, and I don't even want to say how many years back we go before that actually started to happen. I actually have a good friend, actually my son's godmother, who's a librarian up at Northern Michigan College, and we've had this conversation a lot, kind of like, and it was actually her second career as well. The idea and the purposing of a library, not just as this repository of knowledge, but also a space for people to learn and to interact with each other.
Absolutely. For learning outside the classroom, it is the key space on campus. So, students are taking what they learn in the classroom or maybe in their lab affiliated with their class. They get together as a group and create their own knowledge.
Is it okay to talk above a whisper in the library?
Well, on the first floor, we do allow people to talk,
at a
reasonable
volume.
Yeah.
Yep, sure.
The second floor, we do really try to keep as a quiet study area and try to enforce that because we know that people are looking for, again, a variety of uses. They're coming for a variety of purposes, and we try to meet all those needs.
Great. Were you here, Kate, when we did the renovations, or were the renovations already completed before you got here? I can't remember.
Done before I got here. New paint.
Yeah,
and things like that.
New paint, new carpets. Amazing what a difference that can make. And I know. And the library does look better than it has as long as I can remember. So that's a good thing. But it's not just physically going into the library necessarily mm-hmm. where students can benefit from the resource that is available. So tell us about other ways to connect to benefit through using our library.
Yeah, a huge percentage of our usage is actually virtual, you know, so they never step through our doors, but they utilize our resources online. So all of the research databases that they would need to pull up articles for a research paper or a speech or some kind of an assignment like that, that's a large portion of our use.
Mm-hmm. We have something in our film classes that we reference a lot, and it's that system called Canopy,
yep.
where students are able to screen
films
mm-hmm. for free outside of, you know, a school environment, a class environment, or even the library, and we really rely on that. And one of the things that I get from students in terms of feedback is, I have all these free movies beyond just what you assigned me to watch for my class. I don't need I don't need Netflix. I don't need this. And this is really cool, independent stuff, you know. So those are the resources. Those are the intangibles, I guess, that can really add up in intrinsic value to a student through benefiting from the resources of a robust library.
Yep. So one caveat I always add is that you need to come to the library and get your library barcode in order to be able to sign in to that online access.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes a minute. You just need your Henry Ford photo ID, and we will put a barcode sticker on the back for you, and that's your entry into.
They usually learn that the hard way, but it works out just fine. And that's a nice opportunity to get them through the doors anyway.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And we can show them where they need to go to access everything. So sure. Get them all set.
Yeah. And beyond the movies, also, I mean, and everyone's got a phone, but not everyone's got a printer. So,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's other services that are available there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we talk about new students on our campus, first-timers to college, period. Maybe some high schools don't have a library. Maybe this is their first time literally coming into a library. I can't imagine that to be the case, but it could be, especially as Alan mentioned, this digital age. Do you find many groups are coming in, like instructors are bringing students in for just a tour? Students come in for a tour just to get acclimated to? Because I suppose it could be a little intimidating going in for the first time.
Yep, absolutely. And we're always happy to tour them around to show them the physical facilities mm-hmm. and the resources there for them. We hear more and more that students don't have a lot of access prior to college to a local public library or K-12 library, unfortunately. And so, you know, we're happy to be that new, good, hopefully, first impression for them to really show off everything that we have to offer them.
Yeah. I would think just like anything, it's kind of a habit, too. So this is a good habit to learn early on, you know, when you're coming to a new school, that the resource is there to pop in every once in a while. And then when you do have a big need related to a course assignment or something, you feel a little bit less intimidated to just go back where you're comfortable and, you know, kind of get the resources as they are needed.
Absolutely.
One other thing I note, many of our instructors on campus are now keeping books, textbooks at the library in the circulation desk for students to go in and do some reading. We have that in our telecom program, but is it as widespread as I'd like to hope it is, and do students use it?
We are really making a push. It's very popular, mm-hmm. But we have only select textbooks at this point, so we're really trying to encourage faculty to get us copies of the textbooks. We have some grant money to procure textbooks for the CTE courses, mm-hmm. so we're really going to be expanding the collection in that area for students, which will be great, because I see that as a real barrier for students. Quite often they might understand the cost of tuition, but it's a shock to them when they realize that there might be that much again mm-hmm. in costs each semester for their textbooks that are required. And some students just simply forego buying the textbooks because they can't afford to get them. And so we're a nice alternative. Now, the textbooks have to be used in library. They can't be taken outside of the library, but it's a really great service for students to come in and we see them, you know, use the textbook for a few minutes, bring it back, you know, just do the reading that they need to do, or maybe take a picture with their phone of a certain page or a question that they needed. So it works really well. It's very popular.
great. Kate Harger is joining us, library director here at Henry Ford College. And Kate, it's always nice to sort of reinvent what a library means to any generation of students, and we're seeing some of that, whether we like it or not. But in your vision, a year in now, see, if we were like 10 months, I wouldn't ask you this question, but you're over a year now, so I'm allowed to, you know, bring out the tough questions. But what do you see as being your vision for the future of our library, and what are some of the things that are working so well that you want to continue to do and even expand on?
Well, we've mentioned a little bit so far in this conversation how the evolution has taken place, where we're not just this warehouse of books any longer, right? It's more than just a collection. So we can offer various things to students, and we do everything from phone chargers to they can check out graphing calculators. They can use a dry erase board in a study room. So the vision that I have for the library is that going forward, we are ultra responsive to, you know, just hyper responsive to student needs. And those are going to continue to change. And I can't even guess at what they might be a couple years from now, certainly 5 or 10 years from now. But to always have our finger on that pulse and to just be aware of what those constantly changing needs are and being, I guess, just flexible enough to respond to those needs. So whether it's different types of things that they need, you know, beyond phone chargers, what are the next types of things that they need from us? Mm-hmm. Services, you know, what does that look like in the way that we deliver service? Do they still want them face-to-face? Do we move to a more virtual environment? You know, what kind of support do they need? It's all about helping them be successful in their courses and supporting that student learning. Mm-hmm. So I think the more we just remain really vigilant and constantly aware of what the changing needs are, I think the best we can serve our students.
Yeah, very good. The library also is a resource for student jobs on campus.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so at any given time, fall or winter semester, we have a group of student workers that numbers anywhere from maybe 12 to 18. We're a great place, I think, to get really good real-world working experience. Our students are responsible for, like, opening the library along with library staff, so there's that sense of responsibility and learning the routine, but they get great skills too, as far as like tech support. Our students work frontline, so they're right there at the service desk, and there's no question that's off limits. So they really need to be experts on everything HFC, everything technology. They really build a great skill set and strong customer service skills, so I think it's a great opportunity for students.
Great. We talk about sort of the stereotype or cliche of the librarian, you know, from back in the day.
Oh, yes.
You certainly do not represent that, I might just share to our listeners. But what got you into this field? You said it,
yeah,
second career.
Yes.
You want to tell us about your first career or how it brought you into this one? And it's always an interesting story, I think.
Yeah, I was an undergraduate student pre-law. I was planning to go to law school. And oddly enough, I got a student worker job in my undergraduate library my junior year, and I absolutely loved it. So I had a good mentor there, a librarian who was also an attorney. So imagine that, an attorney librarian. So these were both of the careers that I was kind of struggling with. And I asked her, I said, you know, I'm graduating. This was by the time I was in my senior year. I said, I'm graduating, and I'm not super excited about going to law school. What should I do? And I love my job in the library. This hadn't even been on my radar. She said, well, you know, you could get your master's in library science. You could go to law school. But she said, since you've put in the time in law so far, what about paralegal? And that's only a year after your bachelor's degree instead of the 3 years of law school. So I did that, and I would say probably my first week as a paralegal in a large law firm doing environmental law, I thought, yep, library school. So I spent the next 2 years just going, slowly working on my degree, and then transitioned out of the legal field into library science and never looked back. So,
we're certainly glad you did, as are our students. I know so many. It's funny. My husband is a former librarian, actually. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I did not. Yeah.
And so we normally, people in your situation, they kind of start with something else, then transition into it because of the love of a library. Mm-hmm. He started with the library environment and then actually went into more communication planning and strategic planning and that kind of stuff. So it's still related, you know.
Yeah.
But so many people do come, and once they find that fit at the library, like many of the people that work at our library here at our school, they've been there for 20
for decades.
Years.
Yeah,
it's the coolest thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So that means we're doing something right.
Yeah.
That's excellent. One of the, I think, most exciting newer components that we have added to our library is this concept called the Human Library. And I think that's gone on for at least a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. Plans to do it again? Tell us about it.
Yes. Thursday, April 9th. And it'll be from 10 to 2. A little bit of background on the Human Library if you're new to the concept. And it's not just unique to HFC. This is a, I believe it's a worldwide movement. But you'll certainly see lots of human libraries around the country. It's an event whereby a person volunteers to be a human book. So quite often someone from a background in which they were maybe discriminated against or experienced certain stereotypes that they had to overcome. So they volunteer, sign up to be a human book, and then they share their story. So people can come in and check out the human book and sit down and have a dialogue with that person about their experience. So we really want to encourage people both to sign up to be a volunteer to be a human book and share their story, but also to come and participate when we have the event on Thursday, April 9th. And it's a really big event on campus. Seems to be getting more and more popular each year. And just for an example, some of the categories that we've had for human books in past events are bisexual, childless by choice, born in prison, refugee, atheist. So if that gives you an idea of the types of stories that you can hear, really, really interesting event.
And in keeping with the concept of a library as sort of like a repository of knowledge that can be shared with anybody who wants to seek out that knowledge,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yep, and a safe space to have a really great dialogue. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or if you just want to talk about cooking, you can do that too.
Sure.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's very cool.
Absolutely.
In terms of criteria to qualify to be a part of the on the book side, when will you start looking at that, and how does it work?
Yep, so we already have a volunteer form available on our website. So if you go to the HFC library website, you'll see it right there on the homepage. There's a link to click to fill out the form, and we'll be in contact with you from there. So, again, the event is in the library from 10 to 2 on April 9th.
Okay, very good. Kate, we've been talking about our students and the opportunities that they have to enjoy the services and utilize the resources at our library on campus. Do we get many requests for off-campus usage of the library? I know we have public libraries, very good ones in our community, but how does that work, and is that something that happens very often?
You mean others coming to our
coming
library?
Coming to our library.
Yeah, we do have, we serve basically as a community library as well, so people in the community can come and get a library card. There are different lending limits and things of that sort, but our library as a space is open to them and our resources as well. So we do have a fair number of like regular community patrons that do come in that utilize us much like they would a public library. Yeah.
Very good. To find out more information on any of the things we've talked about, including the Human Library or getting a library card or for students that want to check it out, how can they reach you?
Probably the best place is to go to the HFC library website right there from the HFC page. We've got a list of all the staff names and contact information. Great. So all of my contact information is there.
Okay.
And then again, any announcements that we have about events like the Human Library, you'll find all of that there as well.
Okay, easy enough. We are looking forward to getting more people to enjoy the wonderful services and facilities here at our Henry Ford College Library. One of the things when I was a little girl, aside from playing teacher, which was usually was waitress, teacher, but it was also librarian, I'll never forget the little thing with the date that you can move the little stamper. Then
yes,
you
move the date stamp.
Yeah, I suspect that those are not so much used ever anymore, but I remember we had a librarian that got new ones and offered to give the old ones to kids, students that wanted them. It was like maybe in the third grade or something.
Wow.
That was my prize possession for like 2 years. I mean, I had a library at home, and I was stamping all everything I could stamp that my mom let me, and it was the coolest thing ever. But you have a nice, really cool job, and it seems like you enjoy very much
it.
What you're doing. So
yes.
Happy to have you. Welcome again officially to our airwaves, but enjoy your second year. I'm sure you're going to continue to bring great things to our campus.
Thank you.
The Human Library is on April 9th from 10 to 2. Again, more information available at hfcc.edu. I assume you can just, you know, search library, or there might even be the link right there, or formally, do you have to say Eshelman Library or just Library? They'll find
Library.
It.
Yes, Library. Excellent.
And building, what building on campus?
Building B.
Not
yes.
L. Okay, all right.
B for books.
B for books.
Yeah.
There you go.
Easy
I like
to
it.
Remember.
Very
Easy
good.
Enough?
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done, Susan.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
All
Thanks
the best.
For having me.
Certainly.
It's the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. Thanks so much for being with us today. Kitty Love will be up next to take us on a trip down Highway 61 here on WHFR, Making Waves.
Do you have an insatiable appetite for jazz music? Well, why not join me, Earl Jones, your host of the Jazz Horizon Show, every Friday starting at 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. for an evening of jazz a la carte, with appetizing entrees from the menu of your favorite jazz classics to sopping your chops with the taste of contemporary jazz, as well as pre-recorded jam sessions featuring local as well as national artists. So, for an evening of delectable sounds designed to satisfy your exquisite taste, join me, Earl Jones, your host of the Jazz Horizon Show, every Friday from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m., right here on WHFR 89.3 FM, the station that is making waves.
. 25% of community college students report food insecurity and are going to bed hungry. Shocking, right? A friend sitting next to you in class could be going hungry and you'll never know. The good news? HFC is here to help. The Hawk's Nest has non-perishable food items available for students experiencing hunger. And you can help too. By donating non-perishable food items or money, you can be sure that 100% of your donation goes directly back into your college community. Donate today and fill a friend's plate. Go to hfcc.edu and search Hawk's Nest.
Looking to add a four-legged friend to your family? Well, here's the opportunity for you. Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit is sponsoring a program for the month of February, where all adoption fees are either waived or offered at a reduced option. All thanks to a generous donation from Mary Ann Wright. So if you've been debating about the right time to get a pet, now is the time, but only for the month of February. Go to MetroDetroitAnimals.org to learn how to save one of their animals and welcome them into your home.
Suspense.
When was the last time you got involved with your radio? I mean, really, really involved. Well, a generation or two ago, people really did that. They didn't have television. They just used their imagination to paint pictures in their mind. Well, guess what? You can still do that with WHFR each and every Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. WHFR presents Radio Vault. Join us for a taste of comedy, mystery, adventure, drama, and yes, a very healthy dose of suspense. Tickle your funny bone or send chills up your spine with The Keeper of the Archives. That's each and every Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 5, right here on the station making waves at 89.3 and WHFR.FM.
Listener supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Featuring local and independent artists.
Thank you.
everyone from the Twin Cities down to the Gulf of Mexico. Traveling all the time, and that's why my baby stays.